This is a podcast from Cambridge Assessment. For more downloads, visit cambridgeassessment.org.uk.
Michael Young, Professor of Education at the Institute of Education, thank you for talking to the Cambridge Assessment podcast series today. We're at the seminar, The Attack on Knowledge. Can we begin by asking you what you mean by the concept of powerful knowledge?
I think that what I first thought when I first became a sociologist was that, in fact, we could think about knowledge as something social, that actually any knowledge you like, from Einstein's physics to everyday knowledge to taxi driver's knowledge to anything, that is what people know about the world which they know collectively. That's, in a sense, I mean, it wasn't originally me, but what, if anything, was original to me was that I put some of those ideas in the context of education, whereas before, those ideas about what is knowledge was discussed in a relatively abstract way among sociologists and philosophers, and nobody thought there was any particular relationship to anything that went on in the curriculum at all. What I did was to take the ideas about knowledge from those disciplines and then say, what do they say about the curriculum?
And what does powerful knowledge say about the curriculum?
Well, powerful knowledge says that, in fact, if you're going to compel all your young people to attend school from the age of five, then, in a sense, it has to be worth it. You have to have a reason for it. You have to have a reason. And the only reason that I think that you can have, which is a justifiable reason, is that, in fact, by going to school, they will have access to types of knowledge they would not otherwise have access to. And this is what I call powerful knowledge. What I mean by powerful there is that it, in fact, is knowledge that enables you to move beyond the particular, knowledge that enables you to generalize, knowledge that enables you to explain, knowledge that enables you to predict, knowledge that enables you to imagine. So that, in fact, powerful knowledge could be music or novels or literature or dance, because it's through doing those you imagine new worlds and new possibilities. So it's not just knowledge as physics, it's powerful knowledge in those kind of ways. What isn't powerful knowledge is the everyday knowledge, important though it is, that we need for finding our way about the place. Switching these things on, switching them off, getting dressed, all those kind of things. That's all knowledge, but I wouldn't call it powerful knowledge, and I wouldn't put it on the curriculum.
So do you think that in the past we have, perhaps in the 70s and 80s, taken a wrong turning in education, personal and social education, IT skills? Are you attacking skill-based learning?
I'm attacking it in the sense that it is not what is specific to what schools can offer young people. Because what schools can offer, because in a sense people learn skills. I learned to cook. I'm quite a good cook. I learned by sitting with my mother in her kitchen, watching her doing it and then trying it. That is a skill, and I'm grateful I have it. I haven't got many skills of that kind, but that's one. Those are not the priority for school. The priority for school is, in fact, an organisation that's related to actually conceptual knowledge that takes you beyond practice, beyond your experience. So I am, in a sense, against skill-based. Yes, I am. Because skills enable you to do things. They don't enable you to think about doing other things. So they're not emancipatory skills in the way that knowledge is.
You talked about a hierarchy of knowledge. Now, We had a change of government. Mm-hmm. We have a Conservative Secretary of State for Education, Michael Gove. Yes. He likes to recite history, as you reminded us. And in the autumn, there's going to be more emphasis on what you call powerful knowledge. What's your reaction to that? You must be pleased.
Well, I've always thought that there are certain aspects of the Conservatives' policy, and I've never voted for them in my life, and never will, that actually are important. This is why I was talking about this sort of fracturing of the political and the educational in my talk. That in fact, actually, you know, I have found, and it's been quite disturbing, that I agree with some things of those who politically I completely disagree with. Gove thinks that we ought to gradually extend the market in all kinds of ways. I actually think that there's a very important relationship between the public and the private. private, and that if we go over too much to the private, it's even worse than going over too much to the public. And a lot of things that are happening in this country, in every country, that are valuable, important, are produced not by the market, but by actually the public state that, in fact, that we taxpayers have voted for. So there's those things I don't agree with Gove at all, but I think the importance of, in fact, subject knowledge to acquire in the school and have high expectations for all students to have access to that, that is something I do agree with Gove. So we don't have to treat Gove as a sort of either-or box.
If powerful knowledge benefits the teacher, does powerful knowledge benefit the student? You alluded to the fact that the only national curriculum in the past was exams, and you said exams were a good national curriculum.
Well, they had good things about them. They kept standards and they gave significant autonomy to teachers. So they encouraged teachers to be professional but within a framework of standards. Those are two important criterion, but they allowed girls' schools to offer no physics and chemistry and various other things like that which are wrong. And that's why I'm in favour of a national curriculum, because it guarantees that whatever school you go, you will have access to the same powerful knowledge.
So you're optimistic that powerful knowledge will benefit teachers and benefit students? Or can we quantify? Is benefit the right word?
What I do think is that boundaries of subjects are important for the identities of the teachers as professionals. If I'm a chemistry teacher or a science teacher, I go to meetings with my fellow colleagues and I discuss the teaching of chemistry and physics, and so I'm part of a community that's bigger than me.
You also talked about the need for curriculum leadership, not for just analysing the data. What do you mean by curriculum leadership?
Oh, well, what I mean by curriculum leadership is that, in fact, if I was a head teacher, I would be asking my staff in the different subject departments what their curriculum priorities were and how they were expressed. We'd have a debate about that and try and improve those and how they were expressed in the way I was organising my course, how I was selecting content, how I was putting it, what order and so forth. I'd look at the relationship between the means and the ends, really, and I'd get them to think. I would not want them to just say, well, I just follow the syllabus, I do what the exam board said, something like that. I'd want them to have goals of their own, so that in a sense, they took their vision of the curriculum to the exam board syllabus and interpreted it for their kids, rather than used it actually as a set of rules.
And do we know the title of your book?
The title of the book is called Knowledge and the Future School: Curriculum and Social Justice, published by Bloomsbury, and it will be out later this year.
Michael Young, thank you very much indeed for talking to the Cambridge Assessment podcast series today at our Attack on Knowledge seminar. I've learned so much.
Good. I enjoyed talking to you.
This is a podcast from Cambridge Assessment. For more downloads, visit cambridgeassessment.org.uk.